Welcome back to The Source. I'm David Martin Davies. We have been sent a message through time, thousands of years ago. It's one of the oldest messages ever discovered from man to man. It's from the people who lived in the area that we now call South Texas, and they left us a unique series of narratives that provide information that's almost 12,000 years of existence. Trying to figure out what these messages are saying to us, we have Harry Schaefer. He is an archaeologist and the editor of the book Painters in Prehistory, and Marisa McDermott. She is the president of The Witty. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Harry, let me ask you about these paintings, that with this rock art and the pictographics that we have. Where are we talking about? What is this location?
This is located in the canyons of the Devils and Pecos Rivers west of Del Rio, between Del Rio and Langtree. Actually, they go all the way out to Sanderson Canyon. And then they extend down into Mexico as well.
This art is how old?
Well, the dates we have on it so far go back about 4,000. We suspect that there are some that are going to date earlier than that. That's beneath the ones that we've been able to date. And then there's a whole series of styles that extend right on up into historic times when the Spanish first began to enter the area and impact the Indian populations that were there.
And what do we know about the people that left that art?
These were people who lived essentially entirely off the landscape. They were hunters and gatherers. They did not have corn or beans or squash. They lived off the plants and animals in that area. They occupied the rock shelters and caves that are very numerous in those deep canyons, limestone canyons in that area. The value of this in terms of knowledge and research is the fact that because of those the rock shelters, and because it is part of the Chihuahuan Desert, the deposits in those caves are still dry, and we get 8,000 to 9,000-year-old materials preserved, basketry, sandals, things of that sort. So we have a really good, thorough image of their way of life. Not in just the material aspect of it, too, but also the non-material aspect of it as represented in the images on the rock art.
If you want to join the conversation, if you've seen this rock art, if it's left an impression on you, if you really want to tell us about your experiences seeing the rock art, give us a call. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. Marisa, over at The Witty, you have a world-class collection of this material. Tell us about that.
Well, the Witty Museum has excavated in this area since the 1930s. The founding director, Ellen Quillen, brought a cadre of people and worked with universities. At the time, the University of Texas at Austin, but later with Dr. Schaefer, Texas A&M. So there have been decades of excavations in this area. And as a result, our collection is bountiful, really revealing the life ways of the hunter-gatherer, but also the great photographs of the rock shelters themselves. Before Amistad Dam was built, the moisture in that reservoir there's been some fading as a result of moisture. Harry talked about the dry conditions there and why we have so many fabulous artifacts and evidence of these prehistoric lifeways. But the rock shelters themselves, there is some evidence of fading now. So it's important for us as a museum to show what's there now.
When I go to the Witty Museum, what can I see about these people?
There is an exhibition called Ancient Texans, Lifeways along the Rio Grande, I guess the lower Pecos area. And it was done in 1987. We're actually preparing to do a new exhibition that will open in 2016 that Dr. Harry Schaefer will curate. But right this minute, it's a wonderful exhibition, actually, that's held the test of time. And it's a cross-cultural examination of the Lower Pecos people and some of the rock art.
And the book, Painters in Prehistory, a lot of the photographs of images and materials that comes from your collection?
Yes, a good number come from our collection. And all the artifacts in the book come from the Witty Museum collection.
So, Mr. Schaefer, what are they telling us? I mean, these images, they're haunting, they're beautiful, they're colorful, but they're phantasmagoric. What are they saying?
Well, that's a good question. You can have 100 people look at them and you get 100 different perspectives because people tend to want to interpret the art based on our Western view of the world. But the Native Americans had an entirely different view of the world. They saw that they saw the world as essentially a layered universe. Land beneath the surface was the land of the ancestors. And I think a lot of these images may be depicting not only images of ancestor spirit beings and animal spirit beings, but also a change or when people go through different trances to communicate with the spirit beings, they often transform themselves into the animal spirits that they're seeking.
Like their spirit guide animals?
And so you see murals, actually, in the Lower Pecos depicting some of these transformation scenes. You see murals that depict the emergence from the underworld of ancestor spirit beings. There are a number of different murals that depict different aspects of this belief system. We know the belief system changed, and as people looked at it over the centuries, they may have had a different perspective, just as we do.
And there's evidence that they use peyote,
oh, yes,
which is a cactus, which is a hallucinogenic, very harsh on the system, hard to keep down. But if you can manage it, you can have some hallucinations.
That's absolutely right. In fact, the Witte Museum and the Witte Museum collection is some of the oldest peyote we know of archaeologically. It dates nearly 6,000 years old. And one of our scholars, Dr. Carolyn Boyd, has identified peyote in some of the rock art as well. So we know that by 4,000 to 6,000 years ago, they were using this extensively, as the Native American Church does today.
But the canvases, I mean, they're huge. It's you're not just looking at a scattering of here's somebody's little drawing, here's another drawing, but it seemed like they were painting huge images of compositions. It wasn't just spontaneous, improvisational, but very planned out images. I mean, that's my assumption.
Well, that's exactly right. The studies that are being done now are using modern technologies to kind of pull or tease apart these murals, and by doing so, we're able to get a much better idea of the composition, of the layering that took place on them. And I, you know, granted, there are some of these show art from different styles over different times.
Yeah, multi-generational, hundreds of thousands of years.
Yes.
Going through there, hundreds of years. All right, we're going to continue this conversation. We're talking about Painters in Prehistory. It is a new book coming out. It's a collection of and essays about the pictographic art, rock art, and culture that we know about the people who lived in the Lower Pecos region, pre-Columbian folks. We're trying to figure out, what are they telling us? What did they know all those many, many years ago that they want us to know today? We want to hear from you. Give us a call. What do you think they're telling us with this art? 614-8980, 614-8980. And what can we do to make sure this art sticks around for many more generations? This is The Source on KSTX. We will be right back. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. On cliffs, limestone cliffs, thousands of years ago, people were grinding up pigment and they were painting these images. Those images are still there today. These are people, they're gone, their culture is gone, but the artifacts remain, and we're trying to piece together what is it that they were trying to tell us. And we're talking about that right now. We've got Harry Schaefer. He is an archaeologist, editor of the book Painters in Prehistory, and Marisa McDermott. She's the president of the Witte. And Marisa, y'all have on tomorrow, what's the event?
Tomorrow, Dr. Harry Schaefer will be at the Witte Museum. He'll give a brief talk, and he'll be available to sign books. This is the first public access of the book, so please come and have
it. It's a beautiful coffee table book, lots of great color photographs of these images. So let's get to the calls. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980, from folks who want to talk about their experiences with these pictographic rock art. Tom is on the line. Tom, welcome to The Source.
Hello.
Hey, Tom, go ahead.
I've seen probably 70 or 80 sites along the Pecos and Devils River. I'm a member of the Rock Art Foundation. It's one of the most unique experiences that you can possibly imagine. If you can't go to the and see the pyramids in Egypt, you don't need to. You can go and see this. It's the same kind of experience.
Tell me more.
Very unique.
Tell me more about the Rock Art Foundation, Tom.
Well, the Rock Art Foundation, I'm trying to remember how long that has been in existence now, but it was started by a man named Jim Zinkgraff, who took most of the pictures of the and published a book of photographs that's very involved there, that you can get at the Witte, actually. It's a phenomenal organization. They actually own a site that is very special, the White Shaman site. They conduct tours, have a rendezvous, have a beautiful place where you can go and camp and see these things and listen to interpretive tours. As your speaker said earlier, it's very much a personal interpretation, and we tend to put our own stuff on it. But it's very unique, and anybody who lives in this area should take the time and effort to see it.
All right, Tom, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate your information. And so, Harry, tell me about the Rock Art Foundation. Are you familiar with them?
Oh, yes, I am. Greg Williams and his crew, they've done a fabulous job of bringing the public on their tours, and they have access to several sites that are on private property. So if people join the Rock Art Foundation and sign up on these tours, they can see sites that are off the public right away. And the Rock Art Foundation also has assisted us in underwriting this book in part, and provided the funding for the beautiful photographs by Alvin and Doan.
All right, let's get back to the callers. Number is 614-8980. Robert is on the line. Robert, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, Dr. Schaefer, Robert Parvin. And I want to discuss preservation of the sites. In the years that I've experienced that area, assisting with surveys and covering it, I came out with the impression that about 99% of those rock shelters had been looted. Most of that probably prior to 1986, when the National Park Service put an archaeologist on site. But even then, it continued. So how would that affect, in your opinion, how does that, the looting, complicate our understanding of the rock art that it was once more associated with?
Well, it's like you have a library of books that are one of a kind, and then people start taking books out of the library or taking pages out of the books. You're losing part of the record. I mean, there's no other way of putting that. Having said that, you're right. I would probably 80-90% of the rock shelters have been looted, but there are a lot of data that is left in some of the shelters. A lot of potential down there. It's still absolutely the best laboratory in North America to study hunting and gathering cultures. And we should try to preserve what we have left. There are a number of landowners that are very persnickety and have preserved some sites quite well, as you know, Bob. But you're right. Most of them are, in fact, looted.
Most of that land, most of these sites are on private property?
Yes.
Now, I understand, how does it, when I've seen photographs of these, some of them are way up, high up on the cliffs. How did they get up there? I mean, was that accessible at the time, or did they build scaffolding? How did they do that?
Well, they were small, agile people. And I will say, to quote Cormac McCarthy, this is no country for old men. It is the most rugged landscape probably in Texas. And it is extremely challenging. It was probably one of the excavations I did there in 1970s, probably the most physical that I ever did in my 50 years in archaeology. But that's part of it. That's why you really get in yourself and you love it so much, because it is challenging, but it is unique.
The paintings, thousands of years old, still there on the rock face. I mean, I paint my house every couple of years now. It fades in the sun. How is it that, those natural pigments are able to hold up to the ages?
Because your house is in the sun. These are under overhangs, and they're protected. And also, you're dealing with an arid part of Texas. This is part of the Chihuahua Desert, and it's very dry. And with the combination of the protected pictographs that most of these things don't face the sun. They are underneath in the shadows and in the overhangs.
Okay, so let me get to another caller. Let's get Mark on the line. The number is 614-8980. Mark, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Mark Lewis. I read your article in the paper the other day, and I'm going to certainly try to come over to the Woody tomorrow. But I have been leasing ranches in northern Mexico for 20-something years and found some stuff back in the late 80s, early 90s, and we filmed it and came back to San Antonio, and somebody directed us towards Jim Zingraf, and we took the film over to him, and he just about, I'll never forget, he smoked a pipe, and that pipe was just going up and down when he saw these pictures, and asked me where I found this stuff, and ended up taking Dr. Turpin, Sylvie Turpin, over there. And this is just north of Mooskies, and there was a large ranch, over 100,000 acre ranch, and we spent a week with her, and it was unbelievable the stuff that we found. And there's still a tremendous amount of it over there that's hasn't even been discovered, or nobody has access to it. It's extremely rugged. We did a lot of it by horseback, a lot of it by hiking. And it's amazing what's in northern Mexico right now. Of course, today I wouldn't even travel in that area. It'd just be too dangerous. But Jim was really a wonderful man, and my wife and I were members of the Rock Art Foundation, and went back over there to a ranch called La Babia, that's owned by a gentleman here in San Antonio, and went over to their ranch, and I took some people from Rock Art Foundation, and we hiked up and saw some things that they had, and we went over and I took them over to this other area. But I look forward to meeting you tomorrow. I have Dr. Turpin's book, so it's really enjoying listening to you.
Okay.
I'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it.
Mark, thanks for calling. Appreciate that. So he's saying this stuff is widespread, still undiscovered. So maybe there are some sites that the looters haven't gotten to.
Well, there's very likely in northern Mexico especially. However, there has been a lot of looting in the last 20 years or so down there. Dr. Turpin's been one of the few archaeologists who's had really had access to much of that material and mentioned the sites. And she's published some information on it, which tells us basically how far down Mexico that goes. Now, I've seen some large collections from northern Mexico that are looted. These are contained in incredible materials. A lot of them are coming from burial caves, too. What you see in Coahuila, northern Coahuila, is the way the Lower Pecos was at the turn of the 20th century when the Witte Museum started their work down in that area. So you kind of get a sense of what was there when the Witte first went into Lower Pecos.
Let's get another caller on the air. Raul, welcome to The Source. Raul, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Raul, you're on the air, bud.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to say that with our anthropology classes at Texas A&M International University in Laredo, we've taken trips up to these sites, and that would be a good way to fund the preservation of the sites by sponsoring university groups to go out and visit more often through any one of the Witte programs or other programs that they're using to try and preserve.
Okay, Raul. Good idea. Thank you for that. The question remains, why is this not more well-known and more widely celebrated? I love the comparison that we had a while ago, someone saying, don't go see the pyramids of Egypt. Go to see this rock art that we have in our own backyard. What's the obstacle?
Well, the obstacle has been the fact that the vast majority of it has been on private property. And in Texas, we respect private property rights. And some of these ranches were large, and the ranch owners did not want people coming in because they were raising sheep and goats.
But we do have the Seminole State Park.
What we do have, you're right, Seminole Canyon State Park has preserved some of these very unique sites, one of the largest ones. In fact, Fayetteville Shelter has some of the best examples of the Lower Pecos art. And as the Air Formation Rock Art Foundation has trips to some of these sites as well. But the general public just can, from it's a 3-hour drive from San Antonio. It's a 1-day trip. You go down to Seminole Canyon. You can go on the tour, have a picnic, and drive home.
And you'll remember that day for the rest of your life.
Absolutely.
And you will indeed.
All right. Well, I want to thank both of y'all for coming here. Marisa, again, remind me what's happening tomorrow at the Witte.
6:30, a book signing by Dr. Schaefer of the book, Painters in Prehistory, 25% off on the book.
Harry Schaefer, thank you so much for coming up here. Archaeologist, editor of the book, expert, and the author of, you know, editor of Painters in Prehistory, a beautiful coffee table book filled with great color photographs and essays about what we know about these mysterious people and their beautiful art. Thank you so much. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having us.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.